You can meet and hear Anthony Esselin, John Warwick Montgomery, Ryan Anderson, Bev Yonke, Mark Kaltoff, and Chris Rosebro at the 2018 Fall Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 9th and Saturday, November 10th in Dallas, Texas. Early bird registration is $110. For more information, visit issuesetc.org. The Fall Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, November 9th and 10th in Dallas.
You girls will serve the leaders and their barren wives. You will bear children for them.
There's an eye in your house.
We'll send you to the colonies. You'll be cleaning up toxic waste and then you'll die.
Tonight is a celebration of Gilead and of what we have achieved.
We only wanted to make the world better.
Better?
Better never means better for everyone.
I want to keep on living for her.
Remember your scripture. Blessed are the meek.
And blessed are those who suffer for the cause of righteousness.
That's the trailer for the Hulu series, The Handmaid's Tale. If you haven't seen the series, maybe you've seen people dressed up as some characters from the series, either the Women's March or some other protest. Recently, at Brett Kavanaugh's confirmation hearings in Washington, D.C., several protesters showed up dressed like characters from The Handmaid's Tale. What was the message being sent there? And if we are living in the dystopian future that is The Handmaid's Tale, the feminist will tell you it has a lot to do with the threat to abortion rights. But is there another way we may be actually living in that dystopian future, even if abortion remains legal? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. Live on this Friday afternoon, September the 14th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to be talking about the TV series The Handmaid's Tale in an abortion age. Megan Allman of Life Training Institute will be our guest a little bit later. We're going to spend some time talking with Pastor Ted Geese, reviewing the movie Crazy Rich Asians. In an age where you can get in a lot of trouble for cultural appropriation or any kind of reference to race or ethnicity can be interpreted as racism, this one's doing great. This movie is doing fantastic in the box office and in its PR. Pastor Chris Rosebro will join us for This Week in Pop Christianity. We'll talk about megachurch pastor Craig Groeschel's teaching, The Essentials of Innovation. And then we're going to play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. We've got four soundbite from this week's Issues Etc. audio lined up and ready to play for you in the last half hour. We'll play them, and then you can vote for one of them to be Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week by giving us a call, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. You can also send your vote in via email, talkback@issuesetc.org or @issuesetc, or go to our Facebook fan page and vote there, facebook.com/issuesetc, facebook.com/issuesetc. In the meantime, we're going to be talking about the TV series Handmaid's Tale in an Age of Abortion. Megan Allman joins us. She's speaker at Life Training Institute and author of a column for the Christian Research Journal titled Seeing Red, The Handmaid's Tale, Human Dignity and Hope. Megan, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Hi, Todd. It's great to be with you. Thank you.
Very recently at the confirmation hearings for Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh, some protesters appeared there in the chamber dressed like characters from Hulu's series The Handmaid's Tale. What statement was intended to be made there? And what was your reaction?
Yeah, sure. They were dressed in these red nun habits and the white wings on their head with their faces cast downward. So what they're trying to say is kind of the premise of the show, which is that if our abortion rights are taken away from us, then we're going to lose all the progress that feminism has made. So they're really protesting for the right to have an abortion in hopes that Kavanaugh is not going to in some way infringe upon that perceived right that they have. Anyway, the reaction I had wasn't surprising to me. These protests have been cropping up now and again across the country since the show's inception. We're now in season 2 of the show. And so, yeah, it's kind of become the symbol, more or less, of, hey, if you take these rights away from us, everything's going to go.
So just tell us, for those who haven't seen it or who haven't read about it, what is the premise of this dystopian picture painted in the TV series The Handmaid's Tale?
Sure. It's based on a novel written by Margaret Atwood. The novel was actually written in the mid-80s, and at that time she did write it as a dystopian fiction. So the TV show kind of takes some new liberties with it, but the premise is the same. America has more or less dwindled down to New England in the show, and because of environmental toxins and a rising infertility rate, women just aren't really able to have babies anymore. So in this dystopian society, a very rabidly fundamentalist Christian group kind of overthrows the government in a violent coup and changes society into the very strict patriarchal society where men hold all the power and women are stripped of power and are divided into this caste-like system. The handmaids are the only fertile women left, and they are made to wear red all the time, and their only job, their reason for existence, is to have the babies of the commanders, who are the men in power, and that's it. They're basically incubators. They're slaves.
So how has feminism typically applied the message of the show to what's going on in society today?
Yeah, well, when they began making the show, right around the time of the election of President Trump, I think that the show's creators began saying things like, hey, we're no longer making fiction, we're making a documentary at this point. In other words, they saw what they were doing as something very prophetic, that if these so-called corrupt men come into power, they're going to take away women's rights to their own bodies and therefore unravel all of the progress that feminism has made up to this point.
You mentioned kind of radical Christian group. How does the show depict Christians and Christianity?
Yeah, well, whether Atwood meant for it to or not, people who would not are not familiar with Christianity would walk away from the show kind of going, wow, if that's what Christianity is all about, I want nothing to do with it. It paints it as very patriarchal, very demeaning to women, as a kind of religion that belittles women. It takes the verses of scripture out of context completely and uses them as a premise to kind of force these women into this sex slavery.
The main location of the show is referred to as Gilead, and you have written recently, Gilead may be close to reality, but not in the way its followers think it is. What do you mean by that, Megan?
Sure. Well, the fans of the show who are kind of donning these red robes in protest of abortion rights are saying that because now that we have these corrupt men in power, this is the way things are going to go. What I was trying to point out is that if we're going to look at this and say that conservatism or Christianity is going to cause a world like this, we've got it completely wrong. We already live in a world that is divided into a caste-like system. We live in a world where people are valued because of what they can do or what they can offer, functional value, rather than being recognized as intrinsically valuable human beings. And we see that in things like abortion, which is the issue I deal with most often, but also just by taking a look at society in the way even women in our society are divided up. So what I had to say was that that has come about more because of things like secular feminist thinking, the right to abortion on demand, and the kind of the idolization of sexual freedom or kind of understanding pleasure as our highest good. These are the things that have created a society like this that we actually already have, not Christianity as people perceive is going to happen.
So what do you mean by saying that elective abortion is a functional value? You just used that term, a functional value system at its very core.
Well, very simply, because science tells us, the science of embryology tells us very clearly that from the point of conception, you, Todd, and I, and every human being you will ever encounter was a human being at that single-celled stage of a zygote. So in order to have a society that allows abortion, we have to say that there are simply some human beings that don't matter as much as other human beings. And we have to answer the question, well, what is it that makes human beings valuable? People who are in favor of abortion rights are answering that question in some way or another that relies on function. In other words, a human being has to reach some certain level of development or status or ability before we can count it as a human being deserving of rights. So therefore, at its very core, abortion operates as a functional value system.
So let's deal with some of the things that are often either explicitly or implicitly put forward by abortion rights advocates as justification for abortion. And usually it's divided up into size, level of development, environment, and degree of dependency of the unborn. Unpack that for us, and why do none of these justify the taking of the life of the unborn?
Absolutely. Well, SLED, S-L-E-D, if you can remember that acronym, you can remember those traits. It was given to us originally by Stephen Schwartz. And Schwartz said that these are the only differences you can point out between an embryo and you or myself, Todd. And none of these differences work in the way an abortion advocate would need them to say that you could have killed us back then, but not now. Differences of size, so some would say, oh, the embryo is tiny. It's like a dot at the end of a sentence. Therefore, it's insignificant. Well, if size is the grounding of our value, then we've created a spectrum of value among human beings, and therefore a spectrum of rights, such as the right to life. In other words, on that scale, smaller human beings would have less of a right to life than the larger ones. And in a world like that, I mean, my kids don't stand a chance, much less most women who are generally smaller than men. Level of development is another one. The unborn are less developed than we are. That's true. But my daughter, Neely, is 12 years old. She does not even have a working reproductive system yet. She hasn't developed it. And I would never say that I could kill her for that reason. But if we're going to ground the right to life on level of development, then we've created that spectrum. And human beings are continually developing throughout their lives. Environment is where you're located. The unborn are located inside. We are outside the mother's womb. That's a difference of less than 10 inches. And if we're going to say that it's simply a change of location that brings a non-valuable human being into valuable humanity, well, by that same reasoning, a change in location can take a human being out of valuable humanity because logic demands consistency. And finally, degree of dependency. The unborn are dependent on their mothers for survival. That is true. But to some degree, we are all dependent on one another as human beings who live in community. My mother, who is diabetic, is dependent upon the medication she takes to help her body process sugar in a way that it can't do on its own. And I'd never say, hey, I can kill my mom because she is dependent. Likewise, we can't say, you know, we can kill the unborn because they're dependent. They are human beings also.
Megan Allman is our guest, author of a column for the Christian Research Journal titled Seeing Red, The Handmaid's Tale, Human Dignity and Hope. We're talking about The Handmaid's Tale in an age of abortion. When we come back, why does sexual freedom lead to the commodification of individuals?
Remember when education was about the fundamental skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic? And about reading great literature and studying history to give our kids a model for what it is to be a good person? Memoria Press's classical Christian curriculum offers that very model for your homeschool. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR17. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, a classical Christian education that works.
Are you tired of working out at big box gyms? You'll find quality personal training and qualified instruction at Performance Fitness in Edwardsville. You can even work out for a full 30 days before making a commitment to join. Find out more at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. Performancefitness618.com.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
An average of 20 military veterans kill themselves every day. Project Operation Barnabas is a network of LCMS congregations who reach out to veterans and their congregations and their communities with the gospel of Jesus Christ. Operation Barnabas is a program of LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. Find out more at lcms.org/armedforces. Serving those who serve. LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces, lcms.org/armedforces.
You can't do it all. You're just not strong enough, smart enough, organized enough, driven enough. You're not enough, and you hate it. If this sounds like your life, check out the September edition of The Lutheran Witness. Join Jonathan Fiske, Brian Katchelmeyer, and others as you learn to think more deeply about time and your own human limitations. Subscribe today at cph.org/witness. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective.
This is an outrageous and terrible abuse. Of course kids are resilient and God is gracious and God can work despite the terrible things we do to one another. But divorce is absolutely devastating to children.
Secular commitments to free markets and freedom of speech, they won't survive. They won't survive either. Without a religious basis, the civilization will die. The only religious basis that this civilization can have is Christ.
It's not just that Jesus lays down his life for those who are innocent victims of senseless violence. It's that Jesus lays down his life for those who actively hated him.
Generally, I look at the guy and I say, do you want to treat your future wife and you, the future mother of your children, like a used car? You want to drive her around the block for a few weeks or a few days before you commit to making the purchase. Is that what you're telling her?
In the last half hour of Issues Etc. today, we'll be playing Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. There's a taste of those soundbites. We'll play them for you in their entirety, and then you'll have a chance to vote in the last half hour by giving us a call, 1-877-623-MYIE. In the meantime, we're talking about the TV series Handmaid's Tale. In an age of abortion, Megan Allman of Life Training Institute is our guest. Megan, why do you say that sexual freedom leads to the commodification of individuals?
It's the focus on sexual freedom. So the idea that we're going to make sexual freedom kind of the fulcrum of rights in our nation, which we're just looking around, we see that shift happening. And when we do that, what we're really saying is pleasure, the seeking of pleasure through sex, is kind of this highest good for everyone. As soon as that happens and we're seeking sexual pleasure as the highest good, what we begin mistreating other human beings or using them as a way to achieve that highest good so that we can have that pleasure. What's really kind of lurking underneath that for many is a false view of what it means to be human. It's almost like the Gnosticism of the first century that said that your body, matter, physical stuff is just not that meaningful or not that valuable. What really matters is your feelings-based center, your psyche. And if that's the thing driving the boat, well, you can do to and with your body whatever you want as long as it's bringing satisfaction to the true self. In a society like that where the body is so devalued, there's no realization to what Christianity teaches us, which is because we are body and soul, and those things can't be separated this side of heaven, what we do to and with our body actually affects us. And we're actually seeing that play out more and more as depression rates and anxiety are skyrocketing in our society for people who are really just seeking identity, but seeking it through kind of this false idea of sexual pleasure being the highest good there is.
Why is elective abortion so important to a society that has made sexual freedom the fulcrum of rights?
Well, elective abortion is the thing that says you can have sex without consequences. Because abortion is available legally as of right now, it's a way to say, well, I can have sex without having the byproduct of a pregnancy if I didn't intend for that pregnancy to happen. So in a sense, it falls into what I was talking about with this body self dualism, because it says that doing to and with my body what I want in order to satisfy the true self, I can outright deny biology altogether because I have power over that in order to seek this pleasure.
Why has feminism taken abortion as not only its flagship issue, but in many ways, one would say from the kind of the use of the Handmaid's Tale metaphor, it has made it its sine qua non. It cannot exist without abortion mm-hmm. demand.
Yeah, it's an interesting kind of thinking, almost like this upside down pyramid, with abortion rights as the tipping point of that pyramid. And if that goes, then everything else will collapse. I think it comes from a sense of what I'm talking about with this world that we live in that exists as a functional value system. And when you perceive true success, in order to achieve success in a world like this one, I have to look a certain way. I have to achieve that high-paying career. I have to be able to do everything a man can do, all these different things. Abortion is a way to make that possible for women, but it does it in a way that's actually not beneficial to women at all. If you think about it for what it really is, if you think about it as saying, in order to really achieve success in this society, I have to deny one of the most fundamental parts of being a woman, that is my ability to bear children. So if I want to succeed, as long as I'm willing to deny reality, I can make that happen. So I think it comes from just a false understanding of identity and of the way of what true value is in society.
Are you saying that, and there are certainly pro-life feminists, but for abortion advocating feminists, are you saying that abortion has, in essence, become the source of a woman's value?
No, I don't think the source of a woman's value, but a way to achieve a perceived value that is seen as needed. Because if we're understanding value as something that is functional, in other words, I have to be this, I have to attain this in order to be valuable, then we're missing what value truly is, that is intrinsic human value. Christianity has taught all along that we are valuable in light of being human, in light of bearing the image of God. Male and female bear God's image, and that is the grounding of our value. There is no function that's going to increase or decrease that baseline value. Now, there are attributed functions that the world gives us, but those don't ultimately define us.
I'm curious about kind of the abortion advocate's view of history. Because if The Handmaid's Tale is supposed to be a dystopian future, that is, this is what could be or may be happening now to women, I wonder what that particular way of looking at the world says about women before abortion was legally available.
I think that abortion advocates would view women prior to Roe v. Wade as somehow having the inability to, again, achieve that perceived value, that perceived functional value they thought they needed to adhere to in order to matter. I think they saw the inability to seek abortion on demand for those who are advocates of elective abortion. I think they saw that inability for women prior to that as somehow holding women back from things they could achieve to make them somehow more valuable in society. But again, that A, discount some human beings, particularly the unborn ones, as not mattering, and B, tells us that women somehow need to deny who and what they are in some way, deny biology in order to matter in this society. Because it's not a society that actually cares for women at the base of it. It's one that says, we care for you if you will be something other than what you are.
Why do you say that true Christianity cannot create the Handmaid's Tale world?
I say that because true Christianity grants us that intrinsic worth on page 1 or 2 of the Bible, where it tells us that we are made in the image of God. That is the thing that ultimately defines us and gives us our worth. The things that we do are the things that create this wonderful diversity in the world that we live in, and people are certainly gifted in varying wonderful ways. But baseline says we are all human. Therefore, we are all deserving of respect and the right to life. That's what grounds it all. Christianity also goes further to talk about the fact that our freedom that we have is not the kind of freedom that we perceive. That's this unlimited freedom that nothing can infringe upon that. You know, the way that our world sees it today, when we hear words like individualism and autonomy, those are the things that matter. But because we exist as creatures made by a loving creator, there's already some limit on our freedom that's in relationship to God and in relationship to those around us. Christianity informs us that sex is a good gift from God, and there are certain boundaries placed on that gift to help it work the way that it's supposed to. It's not something bad or looked down upon as someone who would who would see Christianity as limiting sex in some way and being prudish, but rather it is a good and high and wonderful gift in the sense that God made it and designed it in a certain way. And Christianity certainly does not belittle women. In fact, women are equal to men in value, uniquely made by God and equal. And if we look at the way that Jesus treated women throughout the New Testament and his interactions with them, God in the flesh, he certainly never treated them as anything lesser. And he didn't act as if there was anything odd about being female at all, ever. So Christianity paints a picture that says that everyone matters, that we can be women and men as we were made to be, and that we can come up with creative solutions in our society besides the taking of innocent lives through elective abortion in order to overcome some of the problems that we have in society today.
Megan Allman is a speaker at Life Training Institute, author of a column for the Christian Research Journal titled Seeing Red, The Handmaid's Tale, Human Dignity, and hope. You can read it for yourself and find out more about Life Training Institute at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Megan, thanks.
Thank you, Todd.
The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for September is called Never Forsaken, God's Mercy in the Midst of Miscarriage. Some of the topics it deals with is how to deal with the shame, the guilt, the fear after miscarriage. How will I remember my child, talking about the miscarriage with others, forgiving others. It also has devotional resources and resources in the back of the book from Pastor Hans Feeney and an excellent essay from Dr. Martin Luther on comfort for women who have had a miscarriage. Find out more about this excellent resource at our website, issuesetc.org. Look for Never Forsaken or call Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040, and order Never Forsaken, God's Mercy in the Midst of Miscarriage. When we come back, we'll do a movie review of Crazy Rich Asians with Pastor Ted Geese.
To know how to be a part of another person's grief in a tragic event such as a miscarriage.
Deaconess Catherine Ziegler-Weber, editor of the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for September, Never Forsaken, God's Mercy in the Midst of Miscarriage.
But as Christians, we have a more significant death that unifies us, and that's what we have to cling to is the cross.
Learn more about Never Forsaken at issuesetc.org.
The Church's Music from the 20th Century. The 17th Century. The 11th Century. The 8th century. The 4th century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Essential exercise for the Christian mind. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Concordia Seminary St. Louis is the Lutheran Federal Credit Union Ministry of the Month. During September, if you open a Lutheran FCU loan to meet your financial needs, or if you use your Lutheran FCU credit card for a qualifying amount of purchases, Lutheran FCU will give you cash back and give that same amount of money to Concordia Seminary. Learn more at LutheranFCU.org. Lutheran Federal Credit Union. Good for you. Good for the church. LutheranFCU.org.
Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and laypeople worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy publishes Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatic Series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up to receive their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com. LutherAcademy.com and like them on Facebook, facebook.com/LutherAcademy.